emotional centers. Let's check in with the intellectual center, see what thoughts might be passing by, just noticing. And sensing the body, breath, emotions, thoughts, having a three-centered presence here, now, in this sacred space. We open to pray. Dear God, thank you for bringing us here tonight to this sacred space, to work with our brothers and sisters, to be present to your inspiration, to open to your love. We wish to work. We wish to share openly. We wish to risk. Thank you for all that we will receive. In your most holy name we pray. Amen. Staying in that centered place, instead of reading scripture tonight, I'm going to read from our monthly AIM card. Our AIM this month being blessed are the peacemakers. And this is Rumi's poem, The Guest House. So we listen with the ear of our heart for any word or phrase that might speak to us or any work idea that might arise out of this. The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a cloud of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a cloud of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a cloud of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Amen. So good evening. My name is Beverly. I'm a fellow student of the work of Inner Christianity. And thank you for coming to class. I'd also just like to stop and take a moment to feel the presence of the people who are not here tonight, who live elsewhere, who listen to these CDs and CDs from Sundays and our other classes, and to recognize that they are part of our community, and we are grateful for their work. So what did you hear in that? Leslie, thank you.
I've read that a couple times these last few days, but when you read it, what I heard was complete, non-critical self-observation of the multiplicity.
Yes.
And to think of myself welcoming all those things, I kind of can do it, you know, that this is for my transformation, but to really laughingly welcome all these parts, just thinking of that is such so freeing. It's just a beautiful idea.
Yes. Thank you. Rebecca.
I have this poem posted on my bedroom door at this time. From what I've shared in the last few weeks, you guys can imagine why. And I'm with Leslie. I mean, when I am awake in the middle of the night, the visitors are not always welcome. But I'm getting closer to remembering that they are all there for a purpose. And and as Leslie said, welcoming them, realizing they are part of our, an essential part of our transformation, is what I'm after.
Yes. Thank you. Tom.
I took the welcoming prayer workshop a while back, and while I was taking that, it was my constant companion, and for quite a while afterwards. And listening to this made me think that I better go back and visit that some more. I think we've become distant.
Yes, it's very much like that.
Yeah, I'm Nancy.
Nancy, thank
ditto.
You.
But I've had some leg hip issues the last 6 months, and you know, I thought I would just never have aging things. I would be different. And I'm not. And so I've been doing a lot of the welcoming prayer, doing it, but not really feeling it, frankly. And but I've read this poem several times recently also, but when you read it, here's what I heard, the levity part. I have a choice of whether I go into kicking and screaming, or whether I go into it with levity, and I want to start choosing the levity part. Thank you.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you. Melanie, you guys are going to have to catch up here.
What I realized was that it isn't the multiplicity in me that opens the door and welcomes them, it's Christ.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. David.
Just trying to represent the center.
Thank you, thank you.
What came to me was, I owe you everything, you owe me nothing. It's probably one of the hardest work ideas that I wrestle with. You know, when those manifestations and others that create those unwelcome guests.
Yeah.
But to be go, okay, there's something to be learned from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Sherry.
I heard two things. One is nothing's wasted. And then the cosmology, where this is all coming from basically the side octave of the sun.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it just shouted out multiplicity in me. It's like a description of my week. So very just, and just the lightness, page 10. Taking all this with the light and lightness of being, and that it truly is all for our transformation. Uh-huh. What a gift. So, Frank, did you want to? Way back here, this side's microphone, wherever it is. It's there. Okay.
What jumped out at me was each has been sent. And this one's great propensity to not want to believe that anything that's difficult should be sent to him. And a reminder that God is the source of it all. No matter what the appearance is at the moment. It's all a school, and these are the lessons, and they're sometimes odd, and often comical if one can keep one's sense of humor. But it is difficult for this one to remember that just as blessings are sent, so are blessings in strange disguises.
Yes. Yes. Another thing that just popped in for me was love your enemies. Love your enemies? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love those who persecute you. Anybody else? Okay, thank you. So, one thing before we go any further, I have a note here that to remind everybody that there's a community work day this Saturday, 9 to noon. So if you can come and help out, that would be wonderful. Something wonderful about really working with other people to make this place more beautiful. All right, so before we get to our reports, if you remember, at the end of the last commentary, there was that question about how can we make use of the observations we have made on ourselves. And I suggested that maybe we could ponder that this week. So instead of doing a self-observation exercise, I thought that we could talk about that. So, you know, we're taught that one of the key things in the work of inner Christianity is to self-observe, non-identify and self-remember. What do we do with those self-observations? How can we make use of them? And if you read ahead to, through the next commentary, it talks about that at the end, and I'll read it, but after we talk about it. Lee, thank you.
I read behind instead of reading ahead. So in the paragraph before, where it talks about surely some of you must recognize unpleasant and, or rather evil-minded eyes, then if you identify with them, they become you. You will them. As soon as you extend your will to possess something, as soon as you take something into your desire, then it is the same as yourself. And so it works in you as yourself, and you believe it.
Yeah.
So to make use of the observations, I would say that maybe I don't believe it quite so much.
Yes. Let's us, it neutralizes those beliefs, or at least brings them into question, right? We can see them more clearly. Yeah, thank you. Any other ideas? How do we make use of these? Sherry, thank you. She's got it here, this one.
If my understanding of the work is correct, then we take our self-observation all the way to self-remembering. So if my observation is taken all the way to self-remembering, then for me it gets me out of duality.
Yes, good. Yeah, absolutely. Anna?
It brings to mind the idea of man cannot do. We can self-observe, non-identify, self-remember, and do it again and again and again. And grace comes.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I've learned, that we don't take it to that step. That's the whole entire step to me is what I'm doing, and I'm doing the work. But I don't know how, but I've changed in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. That's what my children said anyway. But I truly did not do anything, and slowly, gradually, joy comes, and now joy, there I have so much joy, it's difficult to contain at time, but there's nothing that I do. The whole idea of self-observation, non-identifying, and self-remember is just a clearing and emptiness of it, watching something, the eyes. And they shrink, the ones that don't want to do the work. They do shrink, and I don't know how. And then something else comes. Perhaps it's the real I coming out, but it's certainly not my doing. So man cannot do, and I'm trying to remember that as I continue to do this work.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Tamara, then Nicole.
I noticed this week, as I was observing all these identified eyes that are way too many to list, but in general, it led me to the importance of trust in the moment. And I was thinking about what Frank said earlier, just no matter what it looks like and feels like, there is good here, and keep trusting that in the moment, no matter what the eyes, but it keeps. And in fact, it changed my centering prayer word to just trust.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Nicole?
Well, I think observations just give me a point in the work, yes. Like for something for me to continue to observe and witness, mm-hmm. Put the light on it. And also work memory. And I think about like how Donald says, name the eye, name it. And so that when that I observe that again, it's like, oh, it's just that. And I don't have to go all the way down with it.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Point in the work gives us a place to work from, for sure. Gives us a picture of the imaginary eye, piece of it. Good. Well, let's go to the end of this next commentary and read this paragraph where he talks about this. I'm going to start at the bottom of page 316 if you want to follow along. It says, now as regards the question asked at the end of the paper read last time, quote, how can we make use of the observations we have made on ourselves? Let me say first that you must realize that you can do nothing, here you go, Anna, in regard to changing yourself unless you observe yourself. Self-observation must precede all change of oneself. You cannot change what you do not observe. To observe a thing in yourself is to know it. This begins self-knowledge, and the first step in self-knowledge is to see that you are not one. If you know nothing of yourself and your many eyes, how can you change yourself? You have to see what is meant here very clearly. I ask you to discuss this point later on. I will now quote five answers to the above question given when the paper was read here on Tuesday last. 1. The observations that we have made help us to have aim. Okay. They give us force to go on working. So how do we get force? We can only get force from self-observation if it's non-critical. Have you noticed that? You observe something and the critic comes right in, it steals your force, it takes more. So if it's non-critical, you non-identify and then self-remember. Right? Going to self-remembering, like you're saying, Anna, that's the key to really gaining force. Our observations begin to create work memory, like Nicole said. They cause an alarm bell to ring next time the event happens. We can observe the same thing more deeply next time. They increase consciousness. 3. Your self-observation collects eyes round observing eye. It will be a step towards inner separation. And he says this answer is obscure. 4. Our observations will make us less mechanical next time. Right? Think about the experience you've had of that. 5. Our observations help us to see our being. Okay. So yeah, that's why we self-observe for all those things. Very important. Okay, so our homework was to work with multiplicity to see it, and then to see how it can lead us into external considering, if you got that far. And just a little bit from the previous commentary to set this up. Everyone imagines he or she is one person, a unity, and cannot realize that he is not one person. And everyone imagines he knows himself. It requires long work and great sincerity, and particularly great evaluation of the work and its meaning, to realize that you are not one but many eyes. Even your pride, very pride, will prevent you unless you feel the existence of something greater than your pride. The doctrine of many eyes is a stumbling block to everyone. Yet it is true and is a secret that begins to make change of oneself possible. Okay. So, what was your experience? Who would like to share? Anna. This is going to be good.
This was actually grace, opportunity to do the homework. So I was recently in a room with a friend, I'll name her friend number one, Friend number one comes in, and she was full of joy. I feel her joy. I feel my own joy, you know. And we started to talk, and we must have talked really loud. It was a small room. There was a friend number two who was in the room, and he must have gave friend number one a look, because friend number one said, are we being too loud? And he replied, yes, you are loud. And immediately, this one has this, oh, you know, that instinct that, oh my gosh, the thoughts came, woof, you know, it's too explicit to repeat here right now, but immediately the emotion of anger and resentment, and just feeling tight in the body. So I'm able to observe it in all three centers, emotional, physically, and as well as these thoughts that come through. So I did ask friend number one what the work, homework was, and she said, oh, it's to see multiplicity. And I went, ah, yes, of course. And because we're being loud, because we're delighted about being in the work class. And so I've had some problems seeing multiplicity in others. I'm able to see it in myself and can see all the eyes that are in me, but very difficult. And I can kind of see why, because this person comes at me with a different, with an energy, and immediately this one just wants to go, ugh, and don't want to feel it, and want to run away from it, and then later would go, oh, he is this, you know, and not see him, though, as a multiplicity, just run away from that energy. So I decided just to quiet down, observe the energy that comes from friend number two, observe my own energy, and allow for that energy to dissipate. And then it becomes a little clearer when I can then, I know friend number two. I love friend number two. We've had social events together where I've observed friend number two being loud on many occasions as well, in the same room that we were in. And I've observed this friend number two delightful and loving and kind, not upset and annoyed. And then I realized, oh my gosh, my friend number two has all these eyes. So I had to go through the step of thinking, okay, how do I see that eye in me for me to really get it, for me to really reach externally considering? And I remember coming home sometimes and being in a place of work, having to focus on the computer, and my two girls are so delightful and coming home from Lama, and you know, they're joyful, so they're loud and they're bah, and I just want to say, stop, you're being too loud. And I realize, oh, there I am, I'm friend number two. and I could see that, what an opportunity. The whole week unfolded to where I see my friend number two, I see all the eyes in him that is also in me, and I love him. And I realized I love him. All the annoying part dissipated. I can still be in my joy and considering. And it puts me in a place the next time I see friend number two in a small room, I think I'm going to try to see if he needs a little quietness at the time.
Thank you. Yes. How delightful. Just, you know, leads you to a place of when you really can observe non-critically, then it's, oh, right, wow, you know, we're all like that. And, yeah, maybe he does need some quiet, and then you want to, you know, yeah. Thank you. Everyone was a unity to this week. Sherry, thank you.
So I had an event and I had grace in the event. So as the event was unfolding, I was aware of my emotional center instead of having a reaction and having emotions, which is very different for me. Mm-hmm. But what I was aware of is that the other people in the room were expecting a reaction, because that's the impressions I've given them in the past. That's what they have to work with. And so, again, I had grace come in instead. And I was present as I walked through this event. And I could see they're playing the role. This is perfect for me. May not be what I would have chosen. But I could see that that person is giving me exactly what I need. And he's playing his role. And he's doing this from this group of eyes, which were different from yesterday's group of eyes when I interacted with him. And I didn't have a preference whether I was dealing with yesterday's eyes or today's eyes in him. Mm-hmm. And so I call that grace.
Yes, absolutely. And fruit of the work. Thank you. Cynthia, thank you.
I had kind of an unusual experience that came over me of this intense sadness, and I'm just walking through the day, and all of a sudden I realize I am so sad, and it was palpable, and I couldn't shake it off, and I couldn't do anything, or didn't want to do anything. I was forcing myself to go about the day, and because I was observing it, I didn't attach a story to it. So I didn't think, oh, it's because of this, or it's because of that, because I could drum up different reasons for its existence. So I just sat with it and felt it, and wouldn't go away, wouldn't go away. I kept praying, it wouldn't go away. Maybe the next day it's still there, I can't figure it out, but still, because I'm still observing it, that I felt like it wasn't a part of me, that it was just upon me more. And I felt like in prayer I was trying to self-remember, and then it lifted. So it was different for me, because in the past, if I felt sadness, I could find a reason for it because I would be identified with it. So I think that's what observing it did. It kept it at a distance, so it didn't become my story.
Yeah. Kind of became unloading then, in a way, it sounds like.
Well, interesting you said that, because then when I started to think about it, I thought, you know, it reminded me of in my early days of centering prayer, when I would unload, and at the end of the prayer, I think, why in the world am I crying? What, I had no reason for it. And it kind of felt like that. I thought, I wonder, can you just unload as you're going about your day? Maybe it was unloading. But I was thankful for the skills to observe instead of make it me and my life.
Right. Yes. Attach a story to it. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Peter.
I had an argument and this week, and I saw an experience internally that I had never seen before. And the sensation was one of one eye that I could hear and feel. It was my normal argument eye. And then it was as if a trap door opened in that eye, and I fell. into it. And it was as if I was going fast on like an elevator that was falling. And the floors were going by, and different eyes were in that one eye, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I really was, I had fallen. I had descended into hell, and it was going quickly. And I could feel the intensity of the eye growing in strength and anger and hatred and meanness. And I could feel it in my body, and I knew if I was watching myself, if there was a video, that my eyes were wide open. I mean, my physical eyes were wide open, and probably I looked stark raving, you know, crazy and not flattering. And the voice was getting more and more and more intense, loud. All in this one eye. So it gave me a dimensionality to my inner life that I had never seen before. I've always thought of eyes as kind of linear, like a typewriter board, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. this eye, this eye, this eye. But I saw myself as a sphere with eyes, like a word cloud, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. And but then the eye as a psychic entity was also like a wormhole, and it fell. Mm-hmm. It fell into it, into a darker place in me. Mm-hmm. So what was so interesting about that was I went on a walk in the woods, and I was observing that it was not easy to come up, to rise up in that eye, or to get rid of the energy of the anger and the irritation, the very negative emotions that were associated with that particular eye. And so there really was an issue of time and space involved that mm-hmm. biochemically must also be associated. My liver was processing adrenaline and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the time and space required was literally, I was far away from my deepest, truest self. And that the eyes that are more loving, or, you know, that are talking right now, that makes sense. I was far away from it. So that sense of time and space was felt in the eyes, in that one column of eye, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then, which helped me see that as the time passed of the event, and then especially when I went on the walk in the woods, as the time passed, I was able to, it felt like I was coming back to myself. Hmm. And then the external considering was able to kick in. Mm-hmm. And I became more sane and probably more relationally skillful. Mm-hmm. So for me, the insight was there's a time and a space to my eyes. And they're there even though I'm not aware of them. They're mm-hmm. underneath me. And that scared mm-hmm. me at some point. I mean, at some level, it scared me mm-hmm. because certain circumstances bring out different dimensions of my multiplicity. And, you know, I just wonder what I would be like. It just startled me to see the depth of that one particular mm-hmm. eye. And at the same time, I knew it's not I, but it was startling to see how quickly it descended.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
So just really, to make effort to, love is not cheap in the realm of consciousness. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Next commentary is going to talk about dangerous eyes. And yet to be able to have at least part of your feeling of I in observing I. Not all of you went there, or you went there more consciously. Yeah, those chemicals, boy, they just, there's this real interaction with all the centers. You know, that's the instinctive center, really. When you think about the chemicals, and they mix, and they
activate emotions and thoughts and everything gets yeah. And it's like you said, it takes time for the body to process all that out. Yeah. Yeah. And yet there's still that place of observing or just pure awareness of that it's all going on. And thank God it's not I. So thank you. Thank you. David.
The work homework kind of fell on me in the last 24 hours. We were away and we found out what it was. And during this time, my 94-year-old grandmother's in the process of going through her transition. And my mother was down in North Carolina with my brother on vacation. And my mother has a sister who's been caring for my grandmother. And so I always find it always harder, as other people have mentioned, to see the multiplicity in others. But thank goodness for my family, I'm able to see it on a regular basis. And they've been great work for me over this time, as I see the multiplicity in all of my siblings and my parents and my aunt, and because they all live in a very localized area. So there's lots of internal it's a pool of internal consideration that goes on. And there's been feuds between my aunt's side of my family and my mother's side of my family. And so this whole thing kind of came to a head in the last 24 hours where my aunt called my mother and said, I need you to come home. Gran's doing really bad. I need you here. So initially it was a lot of internal considering that I'm on vacation and how bad is she? Hospice doesn't know. So my mom goes home. And so I'm speaking to her today and she's like, I'm glad I came home. So this whole idea to see my siblings, my sister and my mother on the phone with me going through this, oh, I can't believe your aunt did this too, Gran's beginning to pass, to, hey, how are the kids? You know, joy and anger and betrayal, and I don't want them at the funeral. I mean, all this sort of juxtaposing stuff that's happening. And just to sit back, and I think what's interesting is because I am really the geographical outlier of the family over here in Texas. Everyone's on the East Coast. I mean, I really have this separation. You talk about separation in the work. I literally have a geographical separation, yes, that gives me this mm-hmm. ability to see things differently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they just can't. But to see that multiplicity and seeing 10 different emotions from my mother and my sister in 2 5-minute phone calls. And I went, wow, there it is. There's the multiplicity.
And to remember, they're a mirror for you.
That, of course.
It's all there.
Yeah.
So, what a gift.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Well, I became involved in an event with a very dear friend in the work, and saw a huge amount of multiplicity in myself, from self-righteous I, angry I, ashamed I, embarrassed I, pissed off I, guilty I, all of those. Got activated at one point or another. And yet, the fact that I knew for the both of us that the work was the neutralizing force was made this the most amazing experience for me. It was just to know, to be holding all of this in myself. Part of it was there's also fear. Fearful Fanny was afraid of losing love. I'm not going to be liked. Someone's going to, you know. And yet, and being in that, staying in that feeling without resolution right away, was very uncomfortable. I don't come up against that very much. And so this was kind of a first for me. And it was you know, it's almost embarrassing to admit all these years in the work of not really working like this, you know, or having this experience. And you know, ultimately she didn't get her way. And yet, you know, it feels like I did, because to me, that experience of seeing the grace of the work working these two of us was worth more than my way. Way more. Way more. And I just came away with such gratitude for this gift of grace. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I think back to when I was younger, where, I mean, the multiplicity was present. I didn't have that term, but boy, it was like wang, 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 up and down and up and down, and just a cycle, 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 cycle through all that stuff. And it's just night and day. It is night and day, and I just am so, so grateful. And you know, in the midst of all that, just the fact that I'm knowing that my friend is doing the work like I am, it's like you can't do anything else except externally consider, you know? I mean, in some ways, you just can't. I mean, you're embroiled in all your stuff, and yet I couldn't throw it out there, you know? Some eyes tried, but it was like, it just doesn't go anywhere anymore. I can't blame. I just can't blame anymore. I cannot blame anyone anymore for anything, because I'm creating the world. You know, what I see is the world, and then I'm seeing it through this, which is not necessarily to be trusted all the time. So, yeah. And each eye in this multiplicity, remember, has three centers, has its own feelings, its own sensations, its own justifications. And it's all not I. Can we step back far enough to be able to see, you know, and the grace that comes in through self-remembering? Oh. Sherry, yes, thank you.
My commentary this morning kind of opened my eyes a little bit about not criticizing my intellect, my mind, you know. So it was the commentary that Nicol does on the Ark, one of the commentaries he does. But he talked about the reason the three-story Ark has that window on the left. Yeah. It's not in the center. And it's on the third floor, which is our intellectual center. But he talks about that we've lost the hearing from internal, so that's what we have to work with. That the reason it's on one side is that's our ear, and that the impressions do come in at 48, our intellectual center, and that is where we are now as a, you know, society, as a world, as a whatever. So that helped me to not talk about a nattering mind and blah, blah, blah. That's what you have to work with.
Yes.
So that when you were talking, it reminded me of that.
Thank you. Yes. It's the human condition, right? And it's what we have to work with. And then comes back to that poem by Rumi. You know, welcome each one. They're here. That's what reality is. Here they are. Welcome, welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Wendy. It's okay. Well, you said other.
So when you said that about this world, I felt a part of that world. Mm-hmm. So I did feel what you said. So I was glad that Sherry said what she did, so yes, we can change our minds.
Right.
Because it is a very even the thoughts of our own mind and how that is. I was like, oh, we want to be loved out here, the world that you created. And this is the same with me. This is what I'm experiencing in my life. I'm experiencing the world looking at me and going, we created you. I mean, you created us. We want you to love us. And have you got anything for us out here in the world from that creative mind? Because we love ourselves, at least to some degree, and we want you to love us too. And that's just the dance of the unity, I guess, and whatever kind of, I don't know what the term is, but I'm going to say, mood that our multiplicity is in at the time as to what's going to be said to us and what's going to say back. Mm-hmm. And really, I don't feel like I've said anything in saying all that. but I am sharing that with you.
So. Yeah, what I heard was many in the one. It's all part, the higher and the lower, it's all part of us. So. Thank you very much, all of you, for sharing. I would like to move on. I really want to do this whole commentary, so it might take a while, but we'll see. We'll see how far we get, because it's very good, and it's a little on the heavy side. So just remember the guest house and lightness, page 10, taking it all. Okay, so this is commentary on self-observations and eyes, 3, observations of eyes on page 312. After a certain time in the work, a person should be able to recognize quite clearly one or two eyes in himself. He will, of course, be unable to do so if he still remains wholly under the influence of imaginary eye, for in that case he will have the illusion that he is one I, one solid person, one permanent ego. This will prevent him from even beginning to look seriously for eyes in himself. But, as you know, the work teaches that the personality is made up of a large number of egos, which all call themselves I and take charge of us at different times. Thus our life is in the hands of a great many people unknown to us who live in and on us, some of whom may be desirable, but many undesirable. Ordinarily, we do not see these people, mistaking them for ourselves. This is a curious illusion if you think about it. Actually, you should be constantly thinking of it and noticing how it works. Then you may begin to see into the trick and how clever it is and how simple. Some egos in us are very dangerous and should never be allowed either to speak through us or to call themselves I. However, this is easy to say and very difficult to do. Some are dangerous in one way, others in another way. Let us take suspicious eyes as an extreme example. These eyes are amongst the most dangerous in us. They have an extraordinary power of binding a man or woman to their influence. Their action lies in transforming things, or rather connecting them up in another way. And as we listen to this, let's see if we can find examples of that for ourselves. Well, it's not just on this page here. They transpose facts to fit in with their central theory, that is, with the nature of the suspicion. They alter the arrangement of things in the memory and in thought so that everything seems to corroborate and confirm everything else. In this way, they build up an organized mental system, not of truth, but of falsity. In the emotional center, they arouse their own peculiar feelings, which are distinct from jealousy or envy or revenge or hatred, and give a curious excitement like all destructive emotions. The action of suspicious eyes is such that they in a short time spread like a ferment in all directions within us and set or fix the materials of the mind and emotions as if they were coagulated. They also act on the moving center, giving rise to stealthiness, odd silences of the bodily movements, and so on. Suspicion takes everything on the lowest plane and is therefore closely connected with the, quote, sin against the Holy Ghost,
mentioned in the Gospels, which refers to seeing the worst side of everything and everyone. Suspicious eyes are fond of whispered conversations, if you notice them in action. Now, the idea of the work is to make one big observing eye that stands outside the personality and takes photographs of all the eyes in the personality. The more photographs you take, the stronger will the observing eye become, and the more chances you will have of coming into a new life freed from the compulsion and habits of the old life. But apart from the fact that it is difficult to take any photographs at all, at least to begin with, it becomes clearer later on that some eyes are exceptionally difficult to photograph. This is because of their hypnotic power over us. Remember that all eyes are specialized, that is, of different kinds. One is fond of this, another of that. One likes to say or do this, another to say or do that, and so on. Some of these eyes attract us more strongly than others do. Their inner hypnotizing power is greater. This applies particularly to suspicious eyes. These eyes, present in everyone, may play only a small role or may assume far greater proportions. They are amongst the most subjective of the eyes and can eventually employ the reasoning power of the formatory center for their own purpose, so that a person begins to live in another inner world of his own invention, quite distinct from the objective or real situation. Every eye makes, as it were, a little momentary world into which we pass when we identify with it. But suspicious eyes, if consented to and nourished by the will, invade all the inner life and organize it into another and permanent world of hell. Wow. It makes me think of conspiracy theories that are out there. The power of observing eye not to identify with what it observes varies with the kind of eye it observes. You must all have noticed this. The hypnotizing power of suspicious eyes, like that of jealous or revengeful eyes or envying eyes, is so strong that the independent power of observing eye is often overcome. That is, observing eye identifies with what it observes. This will not be the case so easily if observing eye has behind it many strong thoughts about the work, that is, some definite work eyes, and also strong feelings. Okay? Strong feelings. But when people take hold of the work, and indeed the whole idea of esotericism, very loosely and in a trivial way, and therefore actually place small value on it, then observing eye is very weak and unsupported and is easily swamped, like a little boat without keel, rudder, sail, compass, or master. A weak observing eye is due to lack of seeing what the work is about, and if one does not see what the work is about, it means that one does not try to think about it. Esotericism, through the ages, is something very big. One cannot take hold of it with little trivial eyes. Best not even to attempt to do so. Let me say one more thing about this extreme example that we are taking of suspicious eyes. The less you realize your own deceitfulness, the more will you tend to be suspicious of others. The key is to see that they are eyes formed by long habit that you can separate from and not go with, not believe in, not consent to. Of course, if you consent to every eye of the moment in yourself, you are not working, and you do not understand what work on yourself means. Work on yourself means to get into a new way of living consciously inside yourself instead of mechanically. It means to work against your mechanical ways of reacting to everything and so on. Work on yourself means simply work on yourself. This begins when you observe yourself and begin to see different eyes in you that have preyed on you and enslaved you all your life. But all this is impossible if you imagine you are one person. Another set of eyes is based on slander, their activity, and in fact the delight of these eyes lies in various forms of slandering or vilifying or twisting. This constitutes in the work one bad form of wrong talking in general. Their strength varies in different people. When they are marked, a person must struggle to see them and separate from them with all his available willingness and desire. They are very dangerous eyes because they act against the person himself or herself eventually. That is, they turn on you and slander yourself and drag you down internally and so prevent you from understanding, slandering everything you try to do, even quite sincerely. Remember that there is a reason why the devil was called the slanderer in the Gospels. Try to observe when you are slandering, both in your mind and in words, and notice and remember it, and try to see that it is certain eyes in you that are doing it, and notice what they wish to say and feel pleasure in, and how they come to wake up in you and become active and so on. Eyes that belong to the domain of suspicion, slander, hatred, revenge, envy, jealousy, and so on must be struggled with to the end of one's life. To realize that you need not go with these various habitual eyes is the dawn of a new life. It is the beginning of understanding what personal work means. Yes, it is actually so. Nothing sentimental or foolish is meant here. But this dawn does not come as long as you take yourself as one and live under the hypnotic power of imaginary eye, which is a cloak for all the different eyes in you and worn by each in turn. Remember that the secret lies in seeing these eyes as not you, or rather as not I. If you take them as I, then nothing can be done. You are standing on the plank that you are trying to lift, and that is impossible. You are standing in your own way. Is there anything up to that point that anyone wants to comment on? Okay. Now let us speak of different kinds of eyes, some of which may also be very important. Some time ago we spoke of worry and worrying eyes. These form a strong group of eyes in most people. Their action is very interesting to observe. Their sole object is to upset you and make you depressed or, in short, worried. They lead to nothing else. They are quite useless, as are so many eyes in us. But you have to notice for yourself, by direct and sustained self-observation, what they do and say and what their main object is. Worrying eyes act in two main ways. You all have your worrying eyes about one another, about business, about money, about your state of health, and so on. And you also have to meet other people's worrying eyes. Try to see even one worrying eye distinctly in yourself. Study it, see how it only loves to exhaust you and leads nowhere. Then you will see others. Also notice how some of your worrying eyes connect themselves with the work. You begin to worry about the work in one way or another, whether you are working and so on. They are like flies and can settle on anything. They are all small eyes living in small parts of centers. They cease when we get into directed attention. Just like that's with imagination, right? Same thing. We might imagine that worrying eyes have a kind of foreman who looks out for jobs to give them. If you cannot see your own worrying eyes, notice those in other people, how as soon as one worry is over, they almost arrange to have something else to worry over. These eyes disperse force and exhaust people and cause illnesses. They are, so to speak, rampant in Western people. And worrying eyes are based on imagination, right? They're lies. So, yeah. Yes, Alan.
I was thinking about the Rumi poem at the beginning, everything belongs. We were led by this and that and the other. Well, it seems to me that worrying has a useful aspect to it. and maybe it belongs. For example, if you're a little kid and some strange adult taking you into a drippy old cave on some dark moonlit night, you might want to worry. So what it does is it brings your attention to something. What happens is, with a lot of people, they let worry get the best of them, and so they're spending too much time in worry. But if we look at it from objectively, worry has a useful aspect to it, because sometimes it's appropriate to worry.
Well, it definitely belongs, because
Rumi?
It's there. Yes, yes. I guess I would say instinctive fear would be more informative than worry, per se. Worry seems to me it's something in the future, you know, that hasn't happened, but that gut feeling, you know, of instinctive, that gut, I might be connected to worry. I don't know. Worry seems more up, you know, in there. But you never know. Never know. Yes, Rebecca.
I have lots of experience with worrying eyes. But it's so interesting to hear this part of the commentary, because one thing I have noticed in these last few weeks when I've been especially aware of my worrying eyes is it just was so interesting to me that once I got up and was moving around and got to work and started working on things, it was like then that was all gone. I wasn't caught up in that anymore. And yes, that's exactly what this is talking yes. about with that mm-hmm. directed attention. Yes. And it's I like having it explained. That really mm-hmm. is helpful.
Yes. And you said you got up and walked around. That's getting into a different center.
Right.
That also helps those kinds of eyes.
Right.
Get less. Yes. Frank, did you want to... Need to come up further here.
It may be important to differentiate between discernment and worry.
Oh, yeah.
I think very that discernment has a big part in our life, whether it's that child worried about the cave and discerning that that's dangerous, or the many other things that we can discern if we attend to them. But worry, it seems, is something that is circular perpetuates itself.
Yes.
And doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't cause a decision to occur like discernment does, but rather it causes a condition to be imposed upon oneself that distracts from being.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Good distinction. Anything else? Okay. Now let us take eyes that like to complicate and muddle things. They form a considerable group of somewhat various eyes. Their object, of course, is not to help you, but to make everything extraordinarily difficult. They delight in misunderstanding everything. They delight in calling your attention to something unimportant, in delaying you, especially last-minute eyes, as Mr. Spensky once called them, eyes that come onto the stage just as you have to go somewhere or catch a train and so on. Again, let us take the sensational eyes, eyes that love to create a scene, to get excited, and which lead even into hysteria. Their object is to exaggerate everything, and when they express themselves in the moving center, they like to scream or make violent movements. In the intellectual center, they shout, quote, gramophone sentences, such as, I can't stand this any longer, or this is too much. They produce frantic states, which again only exhaust and deplete the nervous system. They are our own enemies, only people like them. You must realize that a great many eyes, in fact most of them, are against you and wish to destroy you in various ways, openly or more secretly. That is why we have to be awake towards ourselves. Now about negative eyes, which are often exceptionally subtle and dangerous, I am not going to speak in this paper. I will only say that negative eyes form a very great part of our inner life and that they always eat our force and weaken us both for life and the work. There is only one thing that can fight for us here, and that is the work itself, and it will fight for us only in relation to our evaluation of it. Negative eyes are created by life, as are other eyes. Life as third force keeps them alive. The work is a contrary third force that weakens all eyes formed by life, save those that can understand esoteric ideas. That is, those who begin to understand that there is another way of living and thinking and valuing and feeling and acting, and wish to reinterpret everything that happens to be in us in terms of another set of ideas. So, and I just want to remind us all that in thinking of the pie charts, you know, the intellectual center has two halves, right? An affirming side and a negating side, and the negating side is natural. That's there. That's given to us, okay? Because that contrasts, right? Compare and contrast. We have to have that negative side. But the emotional center has two halves. Is the negative part supposed to be there, or did we come in with it? Well, according to the work, no, right? That's developed through life experiences, imitating people around us, observing people around us when we're little, right? So that's where they live, and that's why the purification of the emotional center is so important in the work. Okay. Then again, notice eyes that like to be ill and attract illness. The habit of illness can be formed early, and that means that a group of eyes form themselves that wish to occupy the stage whenever possible. They wish to make you ill. It used to be taught by G, Mr. Gurdjieff, that 80% of our illnesses have a psychological cause of this kind. That is, are due to eyes, just as in the same way, if you form the habit of taking some drug, the eyes formed and nourished by it will seek to dominate and destroy you. And that's being scientifically proven now, right? Now look for different kinds of eyes and try to observe them practically. All eyes are specialized. More or less similar eyes form groups, and these may form personalities. For example, a doctor's medical eyes will be various, but will form a, quote, personality within the, capital P, personality in general. Or a person's social eyes will do the same, etc. Often there are useful eyes in us that have been formed earlier and which we do not nourish in after life. This is a great mistake. People often drop their best eyes in this way quite early. They get swamped by life and its exigencies and make no effort in continuity with what they have already gained. Then it is like a garden becoming overgrown with weeds, that is, with useless, poor, or negative eyes. Everything in nature has to fight to make effort. Animals and plants cannot, so far as we know, make psychological effort. But we know that we can. All this work is effort. Not effort such as lifting weight, but psychological effort on this inner world called oneself. We have specialized eyes formed by previous interests and education. One eye is fond of poetry, another of mathematics, another of music, another of writing, another of reading, and so on. When our first education ends, very often these eyes fade and become weak because they are not nourished by attention. That is, we make no further effort about them. To direct the conscious attention in anything requires effort. This is psychological effort. Attention, will, and consciousness are very closely connected. Once we have started on our second education, that is, the work, we should all know to some extent when we should make some effort in connection with useful eyes. Do we do that?
Then if you notice you do not, try to observe what eyes prevent you from doing so. This is seeing, quote, second force in you. That is the force of resistance to effort. When we leave good and useful eyes unvisited too long, they lose heart, as it were. It is much the same inside as outside. What I am saying is that, in regard to different eyes in oneself, one should also work on good eyes. It is not merely a question of working on bad eyes. The work has two sides. It walks on two legs. When you observe genuinely good and useful eyes that want to know, to be taught more, do not neglect them. And this applies to work eyes. You cannot work on bad eyes if you neglect work eyes. That is, if you do not keep them alive by thought and feeling and effort. It is necessary to strengthen work eyes not only by remembering what you are doing, but by re-understanding the esoteric ideas of the work again and again, and constantly relearning and re-seeing the meaning of the work until it forms your sky. This strengthens the side of the observing eye and makes it possible for it to keep outside and to resist the influence of what it observes. All new and inner vigor forms round observing eye, which leads finally up to real eye. When this is reached, then this world, which is really, of course, a school, has fulfilled its task, and you have fulfilled your task in regard to it. But this goal is very far away from us all at present. Okay. So there's a lot in this one. It gives lots of different non-useful eyes examples to work with. So I think for our exercise this week, it's two parts. Okay. One is to choose one of these sets of eyes, or you might want to do one a day, just to observe, where are they in you? Okay, or make a list. I mean, another way could be to make a list of them, keep them on your desk at work, and see which ones pop up. You know, you can see if any of them do. But the other part is, work on useful eyes. Okay? Feed your useful eyes. Nourish your useful eyes this week. And now, we all know we're doing that through centering prayer and through reading our commentaries. But he's talking also about that there are useful eyes in life. There are some life eyes that are useful as well. And he talked about the first education, those things that we learned. Right? Poetry means something that we loved, or, you know, maybe we'd love them again. Mathematics, imagine that. You know, anything like that. So I this personality always takes looking at the negative. You know, God always focus on the negative. Here it is. You know, there's two legs to it. He doesn't often put it that way, but we do need to nourish those useful and good eyes in us. So two parts. Okay, observe some of those that were one of those that are listed, and then feed your useful and good eyes. That clear? Melanie, yes. Let me get the mic to her. Thank you.
I think he talked in there about how we began, or you might have said something about what we lost in our youth that we left behind. And it seems to me that feeding those original infant and toddler and young parts of ourself is about regaining our innocence and rejuvenating and living from that. So it seems really important to focus on that. At least for me right now, I
I find that I go through seasons with the work, and one of the things that I struggle with, because this personality is deeply aware of depression and sadness and the negative emotions, and my work is working with that with people. So it's exhausting to keep a focus in that way, and so I feel like there's grace that's been gifted to me, and I'm really experiencing focusing on that early, joyful, innocent energy that is living in a place of self-remembering somehow. And when I take my focus, although the negative comes in and out, but if I really am focusing there, now it feels like I'm robbing this other energy that's being reborn.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to say that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And we do go through seasons. And there are things that it's the time to look at things, and then it might just not be. So I appreciate your honesty with that. We all have to discern that. And be watchful of any eye that, you know, say, well, I don't have to do that because I'm not saying that's you. I'm just saying that you know, it's all discernment to see the motivation, and you're totally right at this, you know, that there are seasons. I totally agree with you. So I wasn't trying to negate
what
you said.
No, I didn't get that from what you were saying.
Okay, good.
But I think one thing that's really helping me in this reorientation is mm-hmm. learning biodynamic cranial therapy, and it's a focus on health. And so as a therapist, I'm used to looking for what's not working and the negative beliefs and the pain and the suffering and the trauma. And this model that I'm learning is really grounded in embryonic biology and our health and how the baby and that embryo developed itself. I mean, God was developing it, but it has a separate life apart from even the mother. Mm-hmm. So there's such an incredible strength in that. And so when I'm working biodynamically, I get to really touch into that level in people, and it's there underneath all the trauma, and it's supporting everything. Mm-hmm. And so when I focus on it, it grows.
Yes.
And it actually lifts out the negativity without having to focus on what's not working.
Right. Yeah, and I hear that you're also relating it to work ideas and seeing the work in it. That's your work right now. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for all your sharing tonight and for engaging with this. That's pretty. Thank you for sitting and listening for so long to the reading. So let's just kind of come back to ourselves here, and as we take our tithes and offerings, we feel ourselves back in these chairs, our feeling of I in the center of our bodies, and yet still aware of everyone around us in the space. And from that very centered place, we say our affirmative prayer. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed we are to simply remember God. Amen.
Remembering now the amazing abundance of grace that is poured out on us at every moment, we dedicate and consecrate these tithes and offerings to the victory of consciously chosen love in each of our lives and on our planet over the lie that we are separate and are useless acting out from fear. Amen. Our yes must not finally be protected by any no. We must seek to take sides with everyone and against no one. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Amen.